And this is, I think, why many people have rejected virtual meetings in the past, is because there isn't that sense of being with each other. So the video gives us some sense of being with each other, but also being able to share little things as well as big things, to find out not only what we have to do, but how we're feeling about it. A meeting is not all pure transaction for the task at hand. It is also a transaction of how we are, who we are, and how we are together. So I think Liberating Structures invites us to get real serious work done, often playfully, but with attention to that social relational stuff, not just the task stuff. And as a good Italian woman, I'm waving my hands as I say this.
This time on the Plutopia News Network, Nancy White joins John and Scoop in the virtual studio. Nancy helps facilitate successful meetings both online and offline using the techniques of Liberating Structures. In this episode, we discuss what makes a successful meeting, what techniques work and what don't, and chocolate.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Plutopia News Network. You can find Plutopia on Twitter as Plutopia, on Facebook as Plutopia News Network, and also we're on Tumblr as Plutopia News Network. And we're also in the sky, pervasive in the clouds. Today, our guest is Nancy White. Nancy's an international practitioner in understanding and practicing online and face-to-face group facilitation. Her broad focus includes distributed work, strategic planning, social learning, communities, and networks. And Nancy and I have showed up at a lot of the same like online communities over the years. She's involved in Liberating Structures, which is an alternative way to approach design and how people work together. And I think a lot of that focuses online, and I'm just learning about Liberating Structures myself. So that's one thing we'll talk about today. So hi, Nancy.
Hey, John. I should have told you not to read the official bio and just introduce me as a person.
Well, I don't know. Should I have done that? It always feels a little stiff, doesn't it, when we do the official bio thing. But I really want people to know, you know, what a great person you are and all that you do.
Well, thank you. But, you know, I think the real focus now is in how can we be useful and good practitioners versus experts. So in the time of COVID-19 pandemic, it's all hands, all ways, and all on.
Right on. And before we talk about things like online collaboration, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about, I mean, you live in the Seattle area, which is struggling right now with COVID-19. What's it like living in a hot spot?
Well, I'm actually about 60 miles north of Seattle at the current moment because we are very fortunate to have a cottage. And my son is staying back and manning the home front in case anybody's hoping to like hit my house. He's there. Okay. So don't hit my house. but very much in touch with what's going on back in town. We came up about 4 days ago. It is interesting. I think people responded really well for the most part, except for the odd toilet paper hoarding, which still baffles everybody, but yet people are doing it. So much that Costco now says, you know, you can't have like 16 giant packages of toilet paper. But it's been remarkable. So certain sectors particularly, so when the schools closed, how people came together to make sure that kids who had free and reduced lunch had their food packs, because these kids not only ate two meals a day at school, but also took home backpacks full of foods on Friday. So the community has mobilized around that. And what's interesting is, in the news, you may hear that this is happening, but you don't know how it's happening. And in the back channel communities and networks, you see someone has plopped down a big bunch of money. Somebody has plopped down a bunch of logistical infrastructure moving food without asking for credit or publicity.
Yeah, I've wondered how they do that. Do they set up like a central distribution point and all the parents just show up to get the food for their kids? And is it several days of food at a time?
So right now, Monday through Friday, you can show up and there's, I think the city's divided into five or six sectors, and there's a high school, a middle school, and an elementary school, or three schools per sector. In ours, it happens to be a high school, a middle school, and elementary school. They're spread out amongst our sector. And you can go there between like 11 and 1 or something, and you can pick up meals. Then through individual schools, like for in one of the elementary schools where one of my granddaughter goes, the school nurse had always coordinated the family packs that went home on the weekend. It's a project here called Backpacks for Schools or something like that. And so in our school, the nurse says basically PayPal or Venmo money here, and we buy the food and we distribute it to the families. And some families, they're taking the food to the families. In some cases, families pick it up. It depends because, you know, between the work, the social stigma, because frankly, our school is in a well-to-do sector of town, but there are families who aren't well-to-do. And, you know, there's no need to publicly out anybody who has a need. So some of the tenderness and care for doing this happens at the individual level, not at the district organizing level. Their specialty is the larger logistic stuff, the policy stuff. But at the schools, you've got the community level stuff. Likewise, we're seeing, you know, amazing resources for learning online, and not learning as in from 9 to 10 do math, from 10 to 11 do social studies, but, oh, why don't we join for a lunchtime chat with your classroom? Or, oh, did you see Mo Willems is going to be online and showing you how to cartoon characters from Elephant and Piggy? Just amazing stuff. So there's that kind of caring that's manifest through Facebook groups, through email lists, through Slack groups, you name it. People are self-organizing, you know, particularly when I think our governor has done a good job, but we know some other leaders who might not have helped people make those decisions. It's coming from the ground up.
I saw something the other day where like Josh Gad went online to read stories to kids. So I think that it's pretty widespread that they're finding ways to try to keep kids entertained other than just plopping them in front of the television set.
I want to add also that they're also reassuring parents, if that's what you have to do, do that. Don't beat yourself up. Because I think there's a lot of high expectations. I mean, high-tech Seattle, we got all these Microsoft, Amazon, Facebook. You know, they have high expectations. And some of it is just relax. Don't overstructure your day. Play with your kids, but call out the learning moments. You know, cooking is math. Walking outside, there's a nature field trip. There's a lot of stuff accessible to us without going to this kind of, we've got to make sure everything is continued the same. It's not. It's not the same.
And I got a question about you were talking about how there's so much high tech in Seattle. And it seems to me that there's a lot of people in Seattle who could readily and easily work from home. So I'm a little surprised that it spread quite the way it did in Seattle. You have any insight into that?
Well, first, you need to understand that the largest place of infection and death was in a nursing facility. Okay. So we have a big spike in numbers in a very concentrated, very high risk population. The other thing is we have a very sophisticated flu study here that was providing DNA material that allowed, and I may not have this exactly right, so folks, check your sources, that allowed them to do some genomic sequencing, which showed the community spread has been here for quite a while. So there was attention and testing, even though it was not in the formalized manner, it was through an existing flu study that allowed those numbers to show. So I don't think we are the hotspot. I think we're the hotspot that has more data than other hotspots.
Yeah, more testing. Yeah, wherever the testing is happening, they're turning up a lot of cases.
Yeah.
Okay, got that. So,
you got to also realize we have a huge income disparity here too. We've got those, you know, six-figure and up high-tech workers, and then all the service industry that supports them, and they're falling fast in terms of economic well-being.
So, yeah, they're not going to be able to work if everything's closed.
Listen, before the restaurant closures happened, 50 restaurants shuttered that fast.
Oh, man.
And those that have good social media and can pivot towards delivery or pickup, all the rest of them are just collapsing.
A guy who's like a master chef in Seattle who converted his high-end restaurant into a place where you can pick up burgers.
The Camless brothers, two brothers, do they have a bagel drive-through, a burger drive-through, and starting this weekend, They're providing family dinners for a reasonable price. And this is a place where you walk in the door and you've already dropped $100, you know?
Wow.
I can tell you, my daughter-in-law had the burger yesterday and she said it was amazing. And she's working from home. She's by herself. The kids are with us. You know, something beautiful and tasty and made with love makes a big difference.
So
but there's a lot of people who can't afford that still. So
So we also have the advantage of having the, I guess, technical chops to be able to find ways to meet and collaborate online. But some people probably don't. There's still a digital divide.
Yes. And I think what you're going to see in our city, and this is me totally conjecturing just from some weak signals I'm hearing from private groups, is that those who need devices will start having access to devices. Comcast is making free hotspots. I do not know about the ability for people to understand how to tap those, use those. But it'll be interesting because I think this will be a good test of can we quickly respond to the digital divide, which is frankly easier than replacing people's lost incomes. But I think it's a step in the right direction. We still have a lot of language. We have a huge, diverse population, many of which the parents are not always fluent in English. But I suspect the kids will be teaching them because they've gotten exposure at school. But when our schools close, they say we're not teaching online because of that digital divide. We do not want to increase disproportionality. Now that it's 6+ weeks, they're going to start doing television broadcasts starting next Monday. But I think also finding ways to keep kids connected through social media and not isolated emotionally is going to be an important part of things. Because I see how our kids light up when we put them FaceTime or something with their friends from school.
Oh, yeah. I just noticed in my email this morning from not Zoom, which we're using for this conference, but Zencastr, which is another teleconferencing application, has removed all the restrictions on their free version, which would allow people who are just trying it out or can't afford to pay for the actual service, and allowing unlimited usage of their service, you know, for the interim of the disaster that we're in the middle of. And I thought that was rather interesting to see. And I've seen other tech companies loosening their restrictions just to give people access.
Absolutely. There was a guy who wrote a blog post about his experience of the lockdown in Shanghai. And he's a businessman that clearly is something in the digital realm. I don't know what. And his lessons were make an offer right now. Make an offer that can support your clients or beyond your clients. Don't worry about the business implications, but make an offer, because that'll keep you A, usefully engaged, and B, will lead to more business. But C, more importantly, it addresses a need that's right now that you're in a unique position to address and probably have the reserves to weather storms.
So social distancing is really pretty crucial in addressing the pandemic right now. So we are, as we've kind of discussed already, finding more and more ways to connect online since it's harder and harder to have face-to-face contact. And you've been working through this organization called Liberating Structures to pull online facilitators together to support, kind of to better support the migration of meetings and gatherings online. How's that going? What can you say a little bit about what led you there and how effective that's been so far? I know that I've been in at least one of your meetings that had a ton of people show up.
Well, I think Liberating Structures are 33 plus things you can do to engage and unleash everyone in the quote unquote room. They originated offline, and the origin story, and I may be, you know, twisting it a little bit so Keith McCandless and Henry Lampanowitz can tell it accurately, but it originated with their work to try and reduce the spread of superbugs in hospitals, MRSA, methicillin-resistant Streptococcus aureus. So this very interesting kind of echo here with COVID-19. And, you know, some of the things they noticed were that we know the science behind preventing hospital-based spread of this bacterial infection, but behaviorally we don't shift. And it is only when you actually engage everyone in the system, in the solution, can you shift the behavior change. So look at the hierarchical issues of doctors are the most powerful. Administrators probably fall underneath them, then nurses, then orderlies and medical assistants, and then the janitor, blah, 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 right? Until you can engage all of them in the prevention of the spread, it no matter what one group does, it's going to fail. So they did a lot of things that helped people, first of all, alleviate and deal with the fears associated with the superbug. And this is a lesson that I didn't understand the first time I was told the story, and I'm understanding it much better now. So starting a gathering of people who are in a heightened sense of anxiety is, what do we do together that both addresses the work we have to do together and helps us address our fears? So we've been tweaking a bunch of the liberating structures that allow us to kind of voice those fears and to recognize where we're similar with other people, where we're different with other people, and how to use those similarities and differences in working collectively. So in the meeting, I think you attended, did we do the Mad Tea, John?
The one that I attended, we were talking about what not to do.
So we did TRIZ, but we started it off with something where we just wrote about how we felt
in the
chat room. And, you know, 68 people writing how they felt. You're not going to read 68 posts, but you get this sense of humanity gathered. And this is, I think, why many people have rejected virtual meetings in the past, is because there isn't that sense of being with each other. So the video gives us some sense of being with each other, but also being able to share little things as well as big things, to find out not only what we have to do, but how we're feeling about it. A meeting is not all pure transaction for the task at hand. It is also a transaction of how we are, who we are, and how we are together. So I think liberating structures invites us to get real serious work done, often playfully, but with attention to that social relational stuff, not just the task stuff. And as a good Italian woman, I'm waving my hands as I say this, right? the second thing is, liberating structures help. I should go back to the MRSA story. So one of the things they did was improv prototyping. So they're actually improvising what happened, and they put chocolate pudding on their hands. And all the people who thought they were behaving appropriately all of a sudden found out they had touched their face. They had touched something that wasn't cleaned. And in that playful moment of actually acting out what they do every day, they realized they were not adhering to protocol. And there were things they could change. So, you know, in terms of social isolation, we could be, you know, thinking more playfully, but very deadly seriously about how we could do it better. And we could do that online. So pause for a second. Second thing, liberating structures. So as Henry and Keith started using these things, and all of the essences of these structures mostly are borrowed from existing facilitation things. And this is where I got involved, because I'd been using a lot of these things in my own practice. And Keith came over one day with a bottle of wine and a box of chocolates and said, "Will you review this chapter of this book I'm writing?" And my first comment was, "Oh yeah, I know all this stuff." And you know, you've done a really nice packaging job, and that will be of huge value. But what I didn't understand at that moment was, by understanding the pattern underneath what we do, we then can recombine those patterns in many different ways to quickly adjust to what's going on in the room and get us to what we need to do, rather than saying, "Well, here's my agenda and I'm sticking to it, darn it," which is, you know, often a path of disaster, frankly. So they allowed us a different kind of literacy of how to work together in a group. So that was kind of the second aha for me that drew me deeper. Then the third aha was how useful these approaches are in complex situations where you can't know the answer. You can only sense the general direction. You've got to do a lot of testing and iterating. So you have to be able to twist and turn as things emerge. And you have to be able to keep a line of sight to the whole. So there's some structures in liberating structures that are particularly useful for that. One is the eco cycle. Another one is critical uncertainties, which right now are like the kinds of tools that help us figure out what to do next. How am I taking my entire training online? How am I keeping my employees socially, emotionally supported as they're working in isolation? These aren't easy questions, but these tools help us figure out, well, what's the next step? How will we know we're making progress?
So there's this kind of three slopes. So imagine it, you know, a little first hill is a little hero, cool packaging, makes it easy for other people to learn. Second slope is, oh, there's a pattern underneath this that gives us an enhanced intelligence about how to do this. And then the third hill, which is really, for me, quite gratifying, was this ability to use this in complex emergent situations, not just simple things. So I became, one of the kind of central group of people, started in Seattle, now it's global, who practice this. And in this moment of needing to respond, this community is coalescing, not in a core hub manner, but in a series of nodes to say, we know this is useful. We've been experimenting with moving online for the last couple of years, but not in any kind of really disciplined way. And now we are moving in a disciplined way. So there's a hub in the Netherlands, and they're putting together a bunch of online offerings. There's a hub here in the U.S., kind of West Coast centric, but spreading. There's a hub down in Austin. Anna Jackson with Alpinista Consulting is one of those critical people. And right now, Fisher Kwa is also down there. Because they were on their way to 6 weeks of face-to-face events in Europe. They were at the Austin airport. They got on, line with three or four of us and say, all of a sudden we're wondering we should go. And of course, you know, doomsday Nancy said, don't go. For some reason, I saw this one coming and they didn't go.
Smart.
Yeah. But this community, so we have that kind of access to each other. We have a Slack instance, but we use just whatever is available. We use Zoom for our online meetings because of the essential nature of large group, small group, back and forth. And the breakout rooms in Zoom are very helpful for that. And it's affordable compared to some platforms. So this community is really rising. And now there's a calendar. And I think there's like 16 or 18 upcoming free events in the next 7 days that people can join in various time zones to learn how to do liberating structures online. Boom.
Well, all of us have been on, I'm sure, conferences where there was the inevitable one or two people who have decided to hijack the conference for their own purposes. Do you have a best practice for dealing with that kind of personality?
Well, Scoop, I have no best practices. I have useful practices because context really matters. But there's, first of all, is understanding why that behavior shows up in general. This is not with specific, really bizarre individuals, but we have been conditioned to individuate ourselves. And I learned this from another consultant who I really respect, Neil McCarthy at McCarthy Consulting. And he says, people need to differentiate themselves first. They need to be heard. They need to think that their uniqueness or their need or their opinion is visible to others. In order to work productively together, we have to collectively work together. So there's this kind of figure in your left hand, that individuation, and then place in your right hand that collective work. In order for collective work to happen, you need some space for individuation to happen first. So a lot of the things we do in liberating structures are first alone, think about, and then share in a pair, which is part of what we call 1-2-4 all. When one other person hears you, and truly listens to you, okay, that matters too. A little bit of that kind of habituation to be heard gets toned down a little bit. The second pattern that helps with this is to alternate between large group and small group, because often the people who are really trying to hijack really want to be heard and haven't been heard, and that can be addressed in smaller groups more successfully than in larger groups.
So that's the breakout rooms, right?
Use the breakout rooms, yeah.
Right on. I didn't even know Zoom had those until the other day.
Well, you're not the first person to say that. Believe me, you. And I think, you know, in like corporate organizations, we tend to see meetings as places where leaders can be seen and be heard, because people feel if the leader shows leadership, we'll all follow. Add a yes and to that. And it's also the place for the leadership to shut up and have everyone else be heard and seen. In the right combinations of people who need to work together and at the right scale. So we have to move from meetings as information dissemination and, oh God, you know, this sort of, I want to use the word posturing, but that's a negative word and I don't mean it that way, but is giving people validation that their leaders are with them,
That's important, but that's not all we should be doing in our meetings. It isn't just a speech. It's, okay, what's the problem in front of us? What are some ideas for tackling with it? What is the first step we're going to take, and how do we know we're making progress on that step? Breaking it down to things that simple, especially in messy times, can both allow the talent and intelligence of everyone to show up, but also to calm that kind of over-anxiousness that I think we have ramped up in the last few weeks, because that doesn't help productivity. You know, I was over-anxious last week trying to do too much, and, you know, I started really making a mess of things. So, you know, there's something about taking a breath. In fact, a friend of mine today sent me this amazing offer, and I can share it with you guys, and you can put it in the links, but of a quick meditation or self-hypnosis you can do before you get online for a meeting to kind of calm some of that. Because that also causes people to overtalk. Now, I overtalk all the time, and I've had caffeine this morning, and I've had chocolate. So
we had a guest not long ago who talks about this, Gary Gack, who is a mindfulness practitioner and has a book called Pause, Breathe, Smile. And much of what he's talking about in the book is that pause that you take, and how important it is to just stop for a minute before you do some things, and to take a breath, and then to smile.
Well, Mike Parker and his liminal coaching, oh, I should have the right name, but I'll give you the link. He says, if you take big belly breaths, okay, so you could do it together. Take a big belly breath. Let it go. Let's do another one. So when you inflate down to the belly, it presses on the vagus nerve, which sends the signal to that reptile brain, relax. Now, I don't know if it can counteract caffeinated coffee and dark drinking chocolate mixed in equal proportions, but I think it's worth a try.
Well, it's kind of interesting. We were watching a video on YouTube last night of a couple who had been on a cruise ship and had got COVID-19. And the guy got especially sick and had a really bad case of pneumonia. And he absolutely did not want to be placed on a respirator. So what he did was he knew some of these breathing exercises from a discipline he had followed, and he started using what he knew about deep breathing, even though, you know, he was compromised by pneumonia, but he was doing the best he could to breathe deeply. And his oxygen level went from like 93 to 99, and he was able to avoid the respirator. Even yep. though he had pneumonia, he had COVID-19, but he was able to bring up his oxygen level.
Oh, I have no doubt about that. As a yoga practitioner, when I go to a doctor's appointment, they go like, you know, your oxygenation is really good, and your resting heart rate's really good. And I think, you know, we have bodies, for God's sake. I think that brings something also super important about virtual meetings. We still have bodies. We're not brains and fingers on keyboards. And, you know, helping people remember they're sitting in a chair and roll their shoulders and stand up and move. I often encourage people to do gentle twists and to literally stand up. And then if you're on video, everybody sees everybody's belly or midsection. It's kind of weird. You can turn your video off at that moment. But, you know, thinking about 30 minutes, 60 minutes, 90 minutes. And for me, 90 minutes, I need a break after 90 minutes. I can come back and do another 90 minutes, but I need a break, like a half hour break, is to remember to use our bodies, because if we do not keep them strong, we're going to be more at risk no matter what. So, you know, we have to be whole people.
I think it's important to really teach people that are new to working remotely, you know, how to do it. Because when I first started, you know, many years ago, working remotely and not having any real human contact except online, I got really unhealthy, and I had to make a conscious effort to get up and leave and walk and do some exercise and just unplug from that remote work.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think a similar thing is that we need to have moments of socialization that may or may not be quote unquote productive. And different people need that differently. So making offers that can be refused. Hey, would you want to get on Skype for a few minutes this afternoon? To just sending a text saying, hey, this is just a little virtual wave to you from, you know, my remote office. Little things can help people take that emotional second. And I don't mean emotional as an outburst, but paying attention to our inner lives or our inner selves, that can really add value. And they don't, quote unquote, cost much. They're really modest.
So you mentioned earlier these 16 to 18 events over the next week or so are happening in the context of Liberating Structures. Could you describe, you know, maybe two or three of those events and so people have a better sense of what people are doing?
Yes. So I can talk directly about the one I'm doing Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time, GMT minus 7, is we're going to use three Liberating Structures to help you figure out whatever it is you have to do next. And the first one will be to help on the ideation of something tangible you can do using a technique called 15% solutions. The second one will be to get and give help using a structure called Troika Consulting, which works beautifully online as well as offline. It's one of my favorite. When you can sit down with two other people, even if they're complete strangers, share your challenge, turn your back, and get advice that's amazing, even if they know nothing about you. Aren't human beings amazing? And then we're going to debrief using, you know, really an old school thing called what, so what, now what, but with a discipline to really paying attention to what, because often we draw our conclusions faster than actually looking around for data. Whew, does that happen to us in real life too? Whew. So there are three things that you could immediately use the next day or the next moment, and you will have identified one thing that you're going to do to address whatever challenge you're facing right now in this time. It'll be 90 minutes. It is open to anybody, even if they have no experience with Liberating Structures. So it's not like learn about Liberating Structures. It is use Liberating Structures, apply Liberating Structures, then you can come back and learn more instead of you have to know everything there is about Liberating Structures. That's not the way. There is a series of 4 2-hour quick immersions that Fisher and Anna, who I mentioned from Austin area, from Alpinista Consulting, there's one going on right now. It started 33 minutes ago and it'll go until noon my time. And there's two more of those that are scheduled in the next 4 or 5 days. The folks in Amsterdam are doing one around Troika Consulting. And I forget what their other one is about. Maggie Chumbly, who's also here in Washington State, is doing every Friday morning a coffee online in Zoom, which may or may not be Liberating Structures focused, but helping connect, I think, particularly consultants, who many of whom are losing business entirely, just as a place to hang out and understand how virtual connection can help you in your day-to-day life. So those are some quick examples. And the calendar is hosted by Lucas Chaffee from QuicoChat. And Lucas has not only made a space available to us that automatically updates a calendar by just entering a few fields, but he's made an add-on to Zoom where people can self-organize their own breakout groups. So he's left an open Zoom/QuicoChat room that anybody could use at any time if they just want to step in and be with other people. So, you know, this is all people doing this. Nobody's asking for a dime. They're just doing it, and it's freaking amazing, if I may say so.
So do you think that the fact that we're all sort of cooped up right now and the fact that there's so much activity among people who do online facilitation and online community who are already sort of entrenched in that, do you think that it can mainstream, that it can spread, and that people can become more effective at using online social tools other than, you know, the corporate tools like Facebook and Twitter?
I have no idea on the global scale. I am pretty confident that those people who can have a quality experience, and for me, using liberating structures is one of the ways to do that, it will change their practice. It already has. I mean, I have been doing what we call immersion workshops, which many of us old school, old time liberating structure folks do, which is 2 days of learning, just dive into the deep end of liberating structures. And I've seen people come out having changed their practice. When they see it online, particularly because I think people have had so many negative experiences online, you can't quite, you know, jerry-rig an online experience because someone else controls the technology, whereas you can adapt a lot of things face-to-face for yourself without permission from anyone else. So when they see an experience online that contradicts those bad past experiences, and there's enough people that already have existing online meetings, that is going to change. Will it spread far enough to actually have an impact? I have no idea. I think as wide and diverse as my network is, it is still on the fringes of things.
Yeah, I see people still looking for, I mean, you and I have both been participants in online communities that were developed early and that were, I would say, more conversational than social. I mean, people think of social media as being conversational now, but the sense of a long conversation that develops a history of the conversation, and it just kind of goes on and has kind of the same participants and so forth, is really different. And I just wonder if people are going to be starting to want to get to the a context where there's a greater sense of community, that greater sense of like building history together. I always think of it, I think I got this from Cliff Figala and John Coate at The Well, the fact that one thing that really defines a community is a common history that the people have together. It didn't quite happen that way in drive-by settings like The Well and Twitter. So I don't know. I wouldn't know where to direct people now. I mean, The Well is still there and people could join The Well. And I think a lot of people should consider doing that if that context works for them. But I just wonder if we're going to see a different kind of social environment starting to appear. That's kind of what I'm considering here.
Well, you know, I think it depends how long this goes on. I think, you know, how much our habits change or how much we'll bounce back or as they, you know, fall off the horse back to the old way of doing it and going back to what Keith calls the goat rodeo. You know, imagine a bunch of baby goats in a yard jumping all over for everything. My experience is when people share something in common, and for me it's often a practice, they find a way to connect and endure no matter what, and have been doing that prior to this. It is in these moments that we can activate those communities to higher levels. So there's a certain kind of baseline of connection and activity that keeps us connected, perhaps not deeply on an ongoing basis, but the potential to be connected and activated deeply has persisted even into the social media age. I don't think it is, it's clearly not centralized. Many of them may be quote unquote on Facebook, but those are still very disparate, disconnected, and often invisible groups to other people. But as I see them connect when there's a moment and need to connect, they do. So I think, well, there is little like The Well, because people don't have the time or attention span for an ongoing extended conversation with history. The connection that's created in other environments can be as meaningful.
Yeah, the thing I see on The Well is it's kind of amazing to me that it appears that members of The Well spend a lot of time interacting there. And I don't know, I don't have I don't have the attention span, I guess. So many of us have evolved over the years of using the internet to be more and more, to have more and more of an attention deficit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I'm tempted to look at my email right now, but I'm not going to.
Yeah,
but
me too.
No, I think we have a lot of bad habits. And, you know, some of the things I've enjoyed reading in the past weeks are people who said, okay, this is a moment to actually slow down. See how that feels. At first, you know, like you get itching, you get like the hives, you know, and then it's like, okay, this might actually be good. And something of high quality can evolve out of it. Speed isn't always necessary. Doing everything isn't always necessary. In fact, it's usually not. It's a great moment to examine these assumptions we have and to examine our own patterns. Oh, self-reflection. Mamma mia.
Before we go, before we leave, I think we should talk about chocolate. Because you're kind of a connoisseur.
Or addict.
What can you recommend? Are you still able to get the chocolate that you're used to getting?
Well, you know, I always have some chocolate on hand no matter what. I think it's a good practice. Some people hoard toilet paper. I don't hoard chocolate, but I always have some. But the discovery we made yesterday was I have some shelf-stable milk here. We can go to the grocery store and get things. That's fine. There's no panic in that sense. But, you know, we're trying to limit our going out.
Right.
And so there was a container of macadamia milk shelf-stable. So we opened it up and we followed the instructions using multiplying math, I might say. That was a learning moment to try the Trader Joe's sipping chocolate, which it has like 3 tablespoons of their mix, which is basically, seems like pretty high quality cocoa and sugar, with 1/3 a cup of milk. It makes a nice sludge, okay? It was good. We had to add more milk to it. But we made them, when we had to add all this extra milk, we made too much. So I put it in a mason jar and put a lid in it, put it on the fridge. And this morning, you know, I put it on the counter with a pot of coffee that I had made for my husband because I made him jump out of bed to reset the fuse that blew. Probably was my fault, by the way. And he goes, what's this? And I said, the sipping chocolate. Mix it half and half with the coffee. Just zap it a little bit in the microwave to warm it up. And oh my God, Trader Joe's sipping chocolate. When you're next in Trader Joe's, keep your distance, wash your hands, but try the sipping chocolate. Thank you, Trader Joe's.
Yeah, I'm thinking about going to Trader Joe's and other grocery stores as soon as I get my hazmat suit. I've been trying to find one online.
Well, I'm betting on the imitation NASA Apollo spacesuit that's on eBay right now. I'm hoping to win that one. That will allow me to go shopping almost anywhere.
They won't let you just buy it outright, huh?
No, it's a competitive now on the internet. You have to bid for everything.
You mean eBay's finally gone back to actually an auction model?
Yeah. Well, Nancy, thank you very much for joining us today.
This was fun.
Yeah, it's a blast. And you should come back. We should do this regularly, really. I mean, there's always a lot to talk about.
Well, you know, I have no problem talking. Some people would wish the opposite.
Me too. Well, thanks again. And we look forward to seeing you someday.
I hope we can all gather. Yeah, we'll gather again. I'm knocking wood.
What is it? We'll meet again. Don't know where, don't know when.
If you promise to show up, I'll bring chocolate.
Amen. And some barbecue, right?
Oh, yeah.
Think mole.
Learn more about Nancy White at FullCirc, that's FullCirc.com. You can stay in touch with Plutopia at Plutopia.io. On Facebook, look for @PlutopiaNews. On Twitter, it's @Plutopia. With John Lubkowski, I'm Scoop Sweeney. This is the Plutopia News Network, 20 minutes into the future.